All right, and remember to go to www.kpfk.org. There you'll find all the archives, streaming audio, and connections to various websites, all the great programmers, right at www.kpfk.org. Let's welcome to the airlines Jerry Fialka. He is a man that takes media and warps it and contorts it, and it is beautiful. It is stunning. The filmmakers that he brings out that take media, reflects it back on itself, and shows how it reverberates inside our cranial structures. Jerry, you have been standing by. You are such a genie for being up late. Welcome to KPFK.
Thanks a lot, Evan. It's a real honor. It's good to return to Roy's slot. The last time I was here was with a broadcast of an interview I did with Walter Boart that Ned Potter did, and one of the listeners wrote a reaction and said, if Roy would have... Walter Boart would have broadcast instead of Orson Welles' War of the World, the revolution would have started.
What was the revolution at that time, Jerry?
Well, the revolution is constantly us trying to work out what the hidden effects are of the things that we invent. And we can do this by creating community and talking. So that's what you do so well with radio. And it is about what you were just talking about, which is thinking. You know, Captain Beefheart said, I've had too much to think. George Clinton said, think it ain't illegal yet. Hello. And, of course, the Marx Brothers said, we got to try thinking here. And they said, no, we already tried that. So Harlan Ellison asked a question and answered it, much like Bob would do. If you make people think, they'll love you. But if you make people really think, they'll hate you. This is what I've found that you've been able to do broadcasting, Bob, and all your great folks over the years, is that you're making people really think.
Now, when you started your series, what was the name of your series at Midnight Special?
Well, I have like eight different series. One
yes.
of them is called Documental, which is experimental
yes.
and documentary films.
Yes, yes. When you started that, how soon did you bring in Bob, and why, and how did you meet him?
I met Bob through working for Frank Zappa in 84, and... that was probably in the 90s when I brought him to Midnight Special to talk about a film called The Ad in the Ego, which explores the effects of advertising on people. And we had along with us that night Igor Vamos, who eventually became the Yes Men. And this is another question. So what all my series are about is inventing new questions and new metaphors. And, you know, the ultimate Midnight Special question, the ultimate KPFK question is, well, what can we do about this? You know, what am I going to do about this? Write a letter to my congressman?
Yeah.
I'll pull up a protest sign? Well, one of the films that I made in this series that show at an art museum in Michigan was called See, Reappear, and Breathe. And it was advice we got from Bob Dobbs. So we see it, we reappear, we reinvent, and then we breathe. So it's a type of media yoga. And it's asking new questions, like Frank Zappa asked, who are the brain police? Very basic question. Is it something that's within us, or is it some evil, greedy corporation? You know, the gentleman who's going to follow me, you brought up, reminded me of the Andy Warhol line where the most bourgeois thing is to complain about the bourgeois. If you acknowledge your enemy, you empower them. And also you're going to talk with him about the word evolution. McLuhan laid it down so well. Evolution is adapting to exploration. Exploration means not having a point of view, but surveying all the possibilities. That's why McLuhan came up with the laws of media called the tetrad, because he called it a new science. to uncover the hidden effects of the things we invent. Now, there's a great quote that says, science finds no truth. It discovers unknown facts that can be interpreted in a thousand different ways. So we're all after the truth, right? Louis Bunuel said it so well. He said that I'm for anyone who seeks the truth, but I part ways as soon as they claim they found it. You know, that's
yes.
a great irony,
yes.
but it's so yes. true, isn't it?
Well, yes, absolutely. Now, look, Jerry, you were talking about community. And as a Bob McLuhan scholar, I know Bob says that community is impossible.
Well, I feel two people talking to each other is a revolution. And that's how, I know we've all disappeared, and I know everything about the Android meme or appear to know some of it. But it is when you have eye-to-eye contact, or in this case, we're both discarnate, and we're hearing each other, creating community is a form of connecting rather than consumerism. And I got that from Grace Lee Boggs, who has for 55 years been an activist in Detroit, Michigan. And she's a Chinese woman who hung out with Malcolm X and MLK. And on her FBI record, it calls her an Afro-Chinese. She's on Bill Moyer's show. She's been on Amy Goodman. She talks about connecting. Now, connecting via words, we're connecting via radio. That creates community.
Yes. Well, that's, I guess that's really the question is when we talk about community, it's like here and now, and then it dissolves. But there must be some kind of a ghost thought or something that keeps the community alive. I mean, if it's that you always have to be in presence and communicating eye to eye. Or in a discarnate way, how is community built if everybody isn't, if there's no presence, in a sense?
Well, we have to embrace contradiction, first of all. That's the most important thing. And community is best illustrated by the joke. What did one mirror say to the other mirror? It's all done with people. You know, Groucho Marx, they asked him, what gives you the most optimism towards the end of his life? And he said, other people. So, all I can say is that other people, see, I put on all these events for films, for books, and it's really not the film or the book that's important. It's the important is that people are together talking about issues. And the most important thing is that we get, the unknown facts that can be interpreted a thousand ways. That's what science is. There's no truth. It's just uncovering these unknown facts and interpreting them. And understanding there's hidden effects to all these ways we do this. Now, it's a constant struggle with the experimental filmmakers I work with, form and content. That was medium is the massage, medium is the message. That's what McLuhan was all about.
Right.
But indeed, it's a 50-50 thing, and sometimes it's 80-20. It varies. So, I think it is the fact that you're so kind to your audience and you call them darlings and you show your love that is immensely a part of the way you're creating community with a radio show.
Yeah, certainly. I guess whoever sits down in front of that brings a piece, and some of them are shoutcasters, and maybe that brings something out of people. And so when you bring your media ecologists, like what you're going to be doing in Michigan, what is it you want to the environment and bringing these people together? What do you want to bring out? Do you want for them to reflect on the complexity of what it is to see, what it is to be, or is it really to detach and just observe?
Okay, that's a great question. I wouldn't want to ruin it with an answer.
Now,
here's the thing. The film we're showing in Michigan is called All Advertising Advertises Advertising. It was co-made with my great partner, Mark X. Farina. And it's about the hidden effects of advertising as psychoanalysts and prophets in the science of the imaginary. Now, prophets, as we know, words evoke more than their meaning. So we can spell it prophets or prophits. So we're trying to, again, you know, uncover the hidden effects of the things we invent. Now, intention is an important issue. I was speaking with a screenwriting teacher at the University of Michigan, and he said, what's important is when he can clearly see the intention of the filmmaker. Then, as I talked about this with other people, they said, well, Stanley Kubrick says the opposite. He says, I think a great film is when you can clearly not see the intention of the filmmaker. So as I learned from Bob and McLuhan, ambiguity is the form of human maturity. So embracing the contradiction, again, the ambiguity that we're not sure what the intention is. I can verbalize an intention right now to uncover the hidden effects, but it's basically to gather people in an art museum and talk about the hidden effects of advertising. Why is advertising so important? And it works, but we think we avoid it. We think that hitting the mute button and not hearing the ad is helping us not pay attention to something that affects us so importantly. There's two little things I can tell you right now and lessons I learned. In the into the introduction to Marshall's first book, The Mechanical Bride, came out in 51, he talks about Edgar Allan Poe's short story about the sailor in the storm on the sea, in the Descent in the Maelstrom, it's called. And so the sailor's ship is crushed by the ocean, and as he's being swooped down in the whirlpool to his death, he watches the pattern of the whirlpool around him, and in essence, uses that pattern to swoop himself out of his death. And Marshall says we can actually use the swirling sensory overload that we're all caught up in and use it to swoop us out of being trapped in sensory overload. That why not use the techniques of the advertisers to educate rather than say, well, I don't pay attention to advertising. We can't study advertising. So the other story or parable is important is something we've all experienced, and that's the Wizard of Oz.
Yes.
Now, in the Wizard of Oz, it's actually the Wizard of Us. Dorothy wants to go home to find out who she really is or to find out her identity and the warmth and cuddledness of home. And in doing that, this, you know, wizard says, in order to get home, you have to go find me the broom of the Wicked Witch. Well, the broom represents the tool to skywrite, which is advertising. So in the long run, who pulls away the curtain to reveal who it is that's creating this false, you know, create the disease and offer the cure? The person who pulled, the dog pulls the curtain.
Toto. Yes.
Toto, it represents the artist. Now, how do we find out the hidden effects of the things we invent? We look towards the artist. You know, Ezra Pound said, the artists are the antenna of the race. They're broadcasting these hidden psychic effects. And then we can learn how to cope with them. We're not understanding what cell phones have done to us. We're using them.
Right.
And we shape our tools and then they shape us. Not that cell phones are good or bad. It's just that we get swooped up by the effects of the things we invent. There was a futurist show on TV and they talked to this guy and said, well, can you predict anything for the future? And the guy goes, yeah, your cell phone use is going to increase by tenfold. And the whole audience goes, oh, my God. Well, every person in the audience had a cell phone. Well, there's a contradiction there. Why would we all be using them so much if we groan when we know their use is going to increase? Because we've not really studied the services and disservices of cell phones. And we don't know the hidden psychic effects. Just for example, that sounds, you know, what's a psychic effect? It sounds so like Roy of Hollywood or S. Reyes. Well, a psychic effect of a car is, what did a car do to us? It enabled us to go outside to be alone. It enhanced privacy, not community. So, when you get to the stop sign, two lanes, you come to the stop sign, and you look over at the person in the other vehicle, the other metal container next to you, and you're dying to acknowledge that there's some humanity in all this metal and glass that covers us. So you look for their eye contact, but as soon as you get it, you look straight ahead at the road.
True.
So you're searching for that. We're out here retrieving what we learned from the wolves. Let's travel in packs. Let's travel as community together. No, we can't do that anymore because we invented this thing that keeps us alone. It enhances privacy. But we don't think of a car as something that enhances or intensifies privacy. So
it seems to, it really seems, besides privacy, it seems to enhance individuality.
Well,
you know?
Of course, it enhances, style and fashion. You wear your car. And that's where, you know, going back to advertising and how important it is to study it, is that we don't buy a car because of the ad. We watch the ad, and it enforces our lifestyle.
Yes.
That's what we like. Whoa, that's who I was. And Marshall said it so well. In the future, you won't read the, in the present. We read the menu at a restaurant, and we eat the words, the description of the dinner. We don't taste the dinner itself. You know, and that was the beauty of Marshall and the beauty of Bob, is that they can put this into an almost joke method to, you know, so it goes down easier. And, you know, it really epitomizes, after all these years I had Bob on KPFK with David Porter's show, people would call me up after the show ended and we'd say, call this number and give us your reactions to the radio show. Inevitably, everyone would say, I know that guy's saying something. I don't know what it is.
Right.
He's saying something, you know, and that's why, you know, KPFK stands for Keep Perpetuating Franz Kafka. And, you know, KPRW stands for Keep College Radio White. To reinvent.
Those are some of the hidden effects, Jerry.
Yeah, hidden effects. And, you know, KCR bubble you. But KPFK is so important because I've reinvented it. It means not just keep perpetuating Franz Kafka. It means keep percepting and finding Kierkegaard. Now, Kierkegaard said life can only be understood backwards, but it must be lived forward.
That's
the word diaper, you spell it backwards and it spells repaid. And so that's why the fact of Marshall's tetrad, a new science, how do we study the hidden effects of the things we invent? The fourth step of the tetrad is, what does it become when pressed to an extreme? So back to the car, if you press a car to an extreme, what could it flip into? Well, I have friends right here in Venice who live in their car. A car can become a home. You know, they're not homeless. The earth is everyone's home. There's some people who are houseless, but they could actually live in their car. What else can a car become when pressed to an extreme, this whole idea of reversal? It can become a bomb. So, you know, that's why tetrad management can help uncover the hidden effects. And that's why people look from the spectrum ranges from Timothy Leary to Henry Kissinger all have tried to apply McLuhan and Tetrad management to help overthrow the world and help run the world.
On the lines, Jerry Fialka. He is a media ecologist, a Bob scholar, a McLuhan scholar. He runs a McLuhan club here in Los Angeles. You can go to www.venicewake.org and do a /about/about_Jerry. But I'm sure there's a much easier way instead of you guys at 2:45, you know, trying to do that. But just go to venicewake.org. It's going to be easy for you to find the information about what Jerry does in helping you understand Marshall McLuhan. Everybody gets together and reads passages, and it's wild. It really is amazing to sit and try and wrap your tongue and mind around a book that was written back in the 20s and is a Bible to a whole hidden life that that Jerry, that Bob, that Marshall McLuhan all retrieve and have it flip into obscurity as just that great yoga that Jerry is talking about. So, Jerry, when we come back from this quick break, we're going to take some calls and also talk about the work you're going to be doing in Michigan. And we're going to definitely have you back and get more into the Tetrad management, because I think that would be a great exercise for people to do that, to call in and sit there and go through those four steps to see what happened to extension of technology. They just came out and was talking about the psychosis of kids and that using MySpace and Facebook can cause cancer or some kind of ill effects. It's amazing, Jerry. The effects of media. And so 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK, talking about the effects of media. Jerry Fialka, media ecologist, scholar extraordinaire, has been in our neighborhood this whole time, and he is back on KPFK. So stay tuned.
Where the past and the future converge. Go to www.radioalchemy.com. RadioAlchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
Oh my God, time is a ticking. Look at that. It is around 2:50 in the morning, and we are here with you. Jerry Fialka's on the line. He's going to be doing some amazing workshops coming up, and it's way too far away. He's going out into snow country, Michigan, with his works that has usually been seen right here at Midnight Special, doing jamming the culture jammers, advertising as art, McLuhan as music, McLuhan as video art, some of the Ann Arbor Film Fest pioneers, McLuhan as moving image art. He is there to bring about the science of understanding the extensions of our senses and seeing what happens when they are made synthetic and those effects, and they are real. Hey, Jerry, you want to take a call?
Sure. And Evan, one other website people can find out all my local LA events about is laughtears.com. And Bob talked about this when, if Marshall had a website, he would have had James Joyce write the URL so that no one would have been able to understand. But I indeed have James Joyce write my URL. Laugh Tears is actually, there's a typo in every word in Finnegan's Wake, and Laugh Tears is combining laugh and tears, T-E-A-R-S, laughtears.com, and you can get all the information about my local events, and that epitomizes the human condition. We laugh and we cry. So onward with phone calls. Yes, indeed.
All right. Caller two, you are on the line. Are you there?
Yes. Hi, people. I just happened to turn in by coincidence, and there you guys have me on there.
It is Bob. Well, you see, now this is community, Bob.
Yep.
No, it's not. It's not, though.
No, it isn't. The community is analogy and technology. Technology is analogy. That's McLuhan's point. So to make it abrupt, abrasive, just say community is technology, and it determines the kind of community.
Very good. Very good. Well, what is community technology when you're face-to-face?
Yep. You got gesture, you got speech, you got all those things that humans created.
Well, that we just are.
Yeah. Well, that shapes you.
That shapes, but don't we are the shape. I mean, it's everything is from us, right?
Maybe. I don't know where it came from. Maybe the aliens altered us, and they're the original technology and community. Origins are pretty hard to figure out, but it makes it easier to understand what's happening, even once you understand it, that the confusion is over communities and their technologies. That's the battle now. Which technology are you going to adopt?
Well,
if you lose your money.
Well, yeah, good thing you mentioned money, because I want to talk about, just as an example, Jerry, when you're talking about McLuhan's tetrad management, if you are looking at money as a system, which we are seeing absolutely be devastated and shredded at this time, apply the tetrad management system to money and help us understand what has happened to the extreme of what's happened to our economic system.
Well, money is the poor man's credit card, I think. And, you know, I think it's just like money is just a medium. And all media are active metaphors in their power to translate experience into new forms. So, you know, if you can go through what does money enhance, what does it reach, you know, render obsolete.
Well, just as an exercise, let's do that. I mean, so that people understand
it. Better for Bob to do it, because, see, it's like asking Bob to do a tetrad is something he will not do. So here we are, live on air. Hey, Bob, what does money enhance?
Well, for the sake of community, I'll do a tetrad. Money enhances, speeds up the exchange of wealth, okay? It obsolesces barter, it retrieves potlatch, and flips into credit.
And so there, we're, you know, credit card community. You know, what are we going to do? But, you know, maybe burn our credit cards and melt them into plastic.
Why did the environment need to be sped up with money?
No, it does. New technology generally speeds up the situation. I mean, writing sped up society. Aristotle started to look at it and said, we're going to have a problem about usury and interest. It's interesting how he looked at usury and interest, which was an effect of the speed up of transactions caused by coinage and whatever paper they had.
Why would usury be a part of that, though? That seems to be a choice. You don't have to exchange for profit.
Well, it creates a gap, and so it's an intuition that more wealth is being created than is measured by the accounting books.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, but that's projected out, and it's an arbitrary amount. And so, how are you supposed to know, based on the projection life of this exchange, that's going to be enough padding that's going to, you know, because in a barter system, you know, a cow for 10 gallons of milk, that's real, you know, and you get to, you know, you get to live off of that, and it has real value. I mean, how does something so arbitrary become so real?
Because it's community in the drama of cognition. So we're trying to figure out what the effects of something are, like weather. Okay, is this storm going to end in 2 hours or in 3 days or what? What'll I do? So if we look at our technologies as environments impinging on us and altering our perceptions of what's happening and then the effects in older environments, that is an ongoing quest. That's why, you know, Jerry was saying that get to someone who says they got the truth. Well, they got stuck in one medium, one environment, one analogy, and they don't know there's many more coming.
The number here is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Well, talking about media mavericks, of course, Jerry Fialka's on the line. And guess who shows up? Because that is the kind of tentacles of perception that he has. Bob Dobbs,
yeah,
on the line.
I didn't know that Jerry was on. I haven't listened to you in a 2 or 3 months or 2 months or something. I just thought, Carolyn's away. I'm going to see what's happening. I can stay up late. So I just tuned in, and you announced Bloom and then Jerry. So I listened to Jerry, and I thought there's one. I called up to make a correction, or just to fill in, since this might be taped and passed around. It's the first time Jerry and I have ever been on the air together, I think, other than our videos we've done. But I met Jerry ordering stuff, and not in 1984, but in 1987, ordering stuff from Zappa. And then in 88, we went to Mae Brussels' funeral, Carol and I, in October. And then I came down to Santa Monica, and Jerry offered us the place, so we got to go to Fialka's Funny Farm.
Great.
And, he listened to Who's Forgotten for a Lint that weekend, and he never looked back. So that's in 88, and he got me to he got Porter to come over to do an interview, and it was in that interview, and I'm very proud of it, where I predicted the wall would go down, you know, within a year or so.
Right,
and,
right.
That was neat. And then Jerry came and visited us in the 89 or 90 in Toronto, and he brought a Pixel camera, and he interviewed me sitting in the balcony. Oh, back, and that's how he got into Pixel.
Yeah, the Pixel works, just, they're so beautiful. Really amazing, really amazing stuff.
Am I right about Jerry? Any, you know, anything in there?
That was good, and also, Bob, just to go back to the money thing for a second, because you had a theme going there, is Bob explained how media ecology is sustainability recently to me, and I think that's important because that's the key word. Everybody, you know, that's all kids go to college for now, is to study sustainability, and in a lot of ways, that's a form of media ecology, isn't it, Bob?
Yeah, media ecology is the act of thinking and perceiving, which humans have been doing all along. Just McLuhan came up with a new way to use a contemporary phrase, media, which people were kind of confused about. It was all new advertising that. So he took the present and said, this contains the past. It's a continuation of what we'd always been doing, the drama of cognition. And that's why Finnegan's Wake doesn't end. You know, there's no finish line.
Winnegan's Fake.
Yeah.
818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. These gentlemen, well, at least Bob definitely has been here many times. Maybe a lot of you have been down to Midnight Special and seen some of the work by media artists dealing and reflecting on the technology of their communication tools. What do you think about that? What is media to you? Do you understand? Have you read McLuhan? Have you gone to Five Bodied? Are you going to go to some of these places and try and break this down for yourself and see how it's affected your life? Jerry, how has it affected yours?
Well, it enabled me to make films that play for a month, 8 hours a day in an art museum. My latest is called All Advertising Advertises Advertise, which stars Bob. And you can imagine what we do is we make art for the only person who's alive on Earth, Bob. And it just happens that security guards in art museums have to listen to it over and over and over all day. So it's enabled me to, you know, express myself through the film medium and the video medium and gather people and talk about these issues.
And how long did it take for you for it to snap? How long did it take for you to understand exactly?
So, I mean, it's just becoming familiar with terminology that sometimes people don't understand, but, you know, getting knee-deep in the swamp muck, as we say, and you know, being part of it. And it's the doubleness, you know. You sort of play along like you know, and then all of a sudden you might know a little.
Mm-hmm.
So it's you know, if it works, it's obsolete. That's basically it. You know, it's not necessarily that we know what's happening, but we're trying, you know, to define is to kill, but to create is to suggest, or to, you know, we're just constantly trying to suggest and perceive rather than, you know, concept. Concept is conning you into believing that that's the way it is.
This is KPFK, 90.7 FM, Los Angeles, and San Diego, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. On the lines, Jerry Fialko, a media activist, ecologist here in Los Angeles, does amazing things. You can see what happens in L.A. at www.laughtears.com. He's going to be in Michigan. People might be listening in Michigan, but, you know, via live streaming at KPFK. Really fantastic festival that's going to be happening. I'm looking for the dates. What are the dates, Jerry?
Well, it shows at the Flynn Institute of Arts from today, March 3rd to March 31, and then March 21st, I'm doing a lecture there. But these programs appear all over the world. We're going to be doing this whole All Advertising Advertises Advertising up in San Francisco in late April, early May. And then it will eventually end up somewhere like Beyond Baroque here in Venice and in Southern California. We're doing an event also inspired by Bob at Beyond Baroque in April. I encourage you all to go to, because it is the genuine fake film festival. we know there's doubleness in the genuine fake, but when you we made it four to match the tetrad, four fakes are in there, and it's taking cinema to more the happening stage, where there's two projectors, two films going, two video projectors, two videos going, dance, live poets, and live theater all going at once. So, you know, Bob can tell you about Marshall's thoughts on the happening when Capra was first doing this in the 60s, where they were saying, we don't need to have art in a frame on a wall in a museum. Hmm. It can actually be, you know, people cleaning a car with a toothpick and a toothbrush. That could be art. Art is anything you can get away with.
That's fantastic. You know, let me ask you this. You're, and both of you, please answer this. You're looking at advertising itself, and that model. Isn't advertising really just an extension of the mating ritual? You always put on your best. You always present the scent, the smell and the taste of the senses to attract, you know, a purchaser, a person to take you on. Isn't there something that is very natural about putting stuff on, putting things on?
Let me just say something. The medium, the extension, is the mating ritual. Advertising is something different. Advertising gives you the meaning of the put-on.
Advertising gives you the meaning of the put-on.
The meaning.
The meaning.
Of the put-on.
Okay, very good, very good.
McLuhan used to say that people who bought products didn't know what they meant until they read the ads for that particular product, and that's what they read. They read the ads of the products they bought to find out what it meant and how they were supposed to enjoy it. But the actual product was an extension, and extensions are decorations, as Zappa would say. So media are decorations and enhancements, so that's the part that we're, you know, all of technology is sex.
Okay. I like. Yeah, that's very interesting. Jerry, do you agree? What do you think?
Marshall said it's all about sex, death, and technology, and that our behavior is shaped by experience, not understanding. But he was promoting more understanding should be shaping our experience, and understanding is not having a point of view. So again, it's like we don't need to say we love or hate advertising, let's be aware of its hidden effects. But most of us do say, oh, I ignore advertising, I don't have anything to do with it, yet they have logos all over their bodies. And you cannot walk down the street without seeing advertising. So why is this so predominant in our society? Yet, at the same time, why do we ignore it as a powerful means? Or we try to ignore it. We do the double bind, as Michael Shields is going to do at our meeting on Sunday, tells about Gregory Bastin's. It's like kids who know there's no Santa Claus, but they're still going along with it because they can get the gift and go through the ritual. So it's like, you know, this double bind is an important part about how we approach advertising and its powerful techniques and influence that's prevalent in our life.
We only have around 10 minutes left. Let's try and get to these couple of callers that are there. Hey, caller one, you're on with Bob and Jerry.
It might be serendipitous that when you put me on hold, I think the radio show lapsed to where I didn't hear what you were talking about. But the question I have for Jerry is, Jerry, you introduced me to Bob Dobbs 15 years ago. When am I going to be able to start understanding what he's saying? And my next question is, maybe to start understanding what he's saying, is does advertising create community?
Well, that's important. I'm glad you called, because advertising creates community in that we all gathered at Midnight Special and we watched a movie called The Ad and the Ego, and then Bob talked about, you know, the hidden effects of advertising. So in that regard, yes. And we had people yelling at Bob. Remember, Bob? They were yelling at you. And that was the guy who used to be caught up in Scientology. He started yelling at Bob. So yelling is community, definitely. Connecting. And when, when is when you you fell in love with Connie when you first met her, and, you know, it's happening, man. The magnetism is there, and it's not that you have to understand Bob. It's just you got to let him wash over you like a hot shower and enjoy the warmth, right, Bob? Cuddly warmth. It's all fuzzy.
Yeah, I'm like a newspaper. I'm a happening.
On the line, joining us, because we're running a little bit into the second hour, is Howard Bloom. My gosh, what do I have so much to say about Howard Bloom, but he is joining in with Bob and Jerry just because Howard is a maverick with his book, The Luciferian Principle and the Global Mind, which is the evolution of the mass mind from the Big Bang to the 21st century. And so we are just going to mash this up for a second before Jerry and Bob have to go, as we sit there and talk about the media, its effects, its extensions, community, lack of community, and how to understand our environments when you can know it all simultaneous now. Howard, welcome to KPFK. Thank you for the spontaneous come on into this environment. It's fantastic to have you here with Bob and Jerry. It's been too long, Howard.
Yes, I've missed you. And Bob and Jerry, so what have you been hammering home on?
One at a time.
Okay.
We're talking about the fact that there are three sides to every story, yours, mine, and the truth, and no one is timing.
Go ahead.
And I wanted to say that we're talking about community, and Howard, we have community through 8-Bit and Douglas Rushkoff. You've probably heard him talk about me.
Yes. And you probably know, and I'm not sure Evan knows this, but I worked for 20 years in the media as a magazine editor, as a writer, and then founding the biggest PR firm in the music industry. So I've had a lot of experience with this kind of stuff, too. But I will sit back and listen to you guys because you're the experts.
All right.
Howard is a colossal put-on. He put on a lot of environments in his career. He's invaded a lot of newer TV landscape environments and musical landscapes, and now he's a bookman. But as I understand, Howard's getting a little paranoid, according to 8-Bit, and he's getting concerned about the conspiracy. And so I've been waiting an opportunity to interact with him.
Well, that's neat. I mean, you you know my career better than I do.
Yeah.
Hey, you three, we have a caller. Let me welcome caller two onto KPFK. You're on with just an amazing powerhouse of three genies here. What's your question, dear? Caller
yes.
two? Yeah.
Jerry said something a little earlier that stuck with me, the idea of the repaid diaper, the backwards forward. And he told a great joke about the mirror. And I was curious about looking at history and the significance of Venice in the history of the mirror. Apparently, there was a monopoly on mirror technology until 1665. And it was a French company. It was actually the foundation of the fortunes for the Louis XIV court. They actually had some espionage, and a French factory snuck into the Italian factory, and several years later, lo and behold, the factory, under the guidance of Colbert, one of the financial advisors for Louis XIV court, it was the foundational technology that was the base of the ultimate Marie Antoinette fortune, 1865, the Saint-Gobain factory, been in existence since 1665. So looking at the mirror, it's quite ironic that this community is brought together in this amazing ventana, this window, this mirror. And if Jerry, repeat that mirror joke one more time. I really got a kick out of it. This is Paul Orso calling from Costa Mesa.
Awesome. Thank you for your call, Paul. Hey, Jerry.
Yeah, that's Paul. He invented word streaming, didn't know Finnegan's Wake was already Finneganizing it. And I think Bob can tell us about mirroring and matching, but it goes like this. What did one mirror say to the other mirror? It's all done with people. So, Bob, what's the difference between mirroring and matching?
McLuhan wrote, his first essay on media was called The Analogical Mirrors, written about 1943. And he, analogy, the technology and community is a mirror. And what's interesting is that the visual mirror flips your image. But when you see yourself on television through the monitor, your image is not flipped. Totally different dynamics.
Can I toss in a bit of trivia?
Beg your pardon?
Can I toss in a little bit of trivia? About 1450 or so, a guy made his initial money by making mirrors in Germany. So that's 200 years before the day we're talking about. And there was a new technique. It involved first pouring a bunch of glass into a frame and then pouring lead over it so the lead would provide the backing. And the guy making the mirrors with this technique was named Gutenberg, and pouring lead became a very important technology for his next invention, the printing press.
Right, and McLuhan would say that the printing press enhanced the eye, therefore making people concerned about their appearance so that the mirror and the printed book come in together.
Well, it'd be the first time in history people were able to clearly see themselves the way that other people might have seen them, even though the mirrors that Gutenberg was making were only about 2 inches across.
Right, and then the book becomes a mirror for the whole community. When everybody's reading books, then their sensory ratios are changed, and then that becomes locked in as an analogy or a community.
And the whole process of reading reorganizes the brain very significantly. It gets the motor sections of the brain to work with the visual centers of the brain, all trying to operate the tongue in order to get across concepts. It just pulls all kinds of parts of the brain together. And even though neuroplasticity only allows you a certain amount of changes in the brain, when you teach reading to little kids, the first 4 to 6 years of their life, they're born with twice as many brain cells as they need, and any brain cells that aren't used disappear. They commit suicide. Well, that means you've got a bunch of kids raised on reading using brain assemblies in ways that they've never been used before, and those brain assemblies become a permanent part of their life.
Yeah, and it's largely left hemisphere, they discovered.
Right.
And
There's
one more right there, and that is you brought up the word lead. And, you know, these Irishmen used to drink their whiskey, which is the word for liquid of life, out of lead vessels. And it was the lead that actually put them in this state where for 3 days they were not sure whether these guys were dead or alive because they were sort of in a zombie state. And that's what awake is. Awake is they're waiting to see if this guy really is dead from lead poisoning or not. So it all goes back to the Winnegan's fake, eh, Bob?
Yep. He had the last word, James Joyce, and everybody's replaying his insights and trying to find the origins of it.
Let me ask you guys to...
...that aren't used disappear. They commit suicide. Well, that means you've got a bunch of kids raised on reading using brain assemblies in ways that they've never been used before, and those brain assemblies become a permanent part of their life.
Yeah, and it's largely left hemisphere, they discovered.
Right.
And there's one more right there, and that is you brought up the word lead, and, you know, these Irishmen used to drink their whiskey, which is the word for liquid of life, out of lead vessels. And it was the lead that actually put them in this state where for 3 days they were not sure whether these guys were dead or alive because they were sort of in a zombie state, and that's what awake is. Awake is they're waiting to see if this guy really is dead from lead poisoning or not. So it all goes back to the Winnegan's fake, eh, Bob?
Yep. He had the last word, James Joyce, and everybody's replaying his insights and trying to find the origins of it.
Let me ask you guys to comment around the campaign for Obama, because he basically came across as like a retrieval of the JFK kind of stardom, et cetera. Huge media image. You have this lovely poster of him everywhere, and he is trying to live up to the expectations of the media image. And I just am wondering how you guys have processed how he has been brought forth. Howard, why don't you start?
Well, there's a phrase that I just ran across today in a book by Eric Erickson's daughter, and it's called grandiose self-image. And high achievers, she says, have a grandiose self-image. Well, Obama is courageous enough to put forth an image of his capability to do things that his past would never have allowed us to anticipate or predict. He started very small. He started just in Illinois, and he projected an ability to be a president on a national level, and he has so far been living up terrifically to the tremendous expectation that he gave us for what he would do and that he set for himself as a standard of what he would do. And he's done it by finding some of the brightest people in the country and pulling them all together to work on this particular crisis. And, you know, ego, we're often told that ego is a poison, that it's a terrible, nasty thing. We should all get rid of our egos. Hell, our egos are our flotation cushions. They're what carry us into achieving what we aspire to. And Barack Obama has done a wonderful job of showing us the positive side of ego, striving towards something that is extremely difficult.
Very good. Bob, what do you think?
Well, I agree with Stephen Colbert, who announced last week, in the middle of his show, he says, okay, it's 11:34 p.m., the Obama administration is over. It's a failure. I agree with that. Obama's gone. Yeah, we're in a new situation. Matter of fact, on my radio show today, I announced that I was the president now. How's that for a megalomaniac floating cushion? The Lucifer. I announced I was Lucifer.
Stop.
Stop.
That's
you're coming, Evan. You're coming.
Yeah. So, okay. But why is he done?
Oh, there's no chance for the White House to be operational. Everybody's balkanizing all over the states. They're forming their own communities. Some of them are going into crime. Some are just organizing out of their Rotary and Kiwanis. And I'm telling people to go meet at the airports to hook up with other communities coming through the airports. There's anarchy, and this is great. And Obama should be ignored. We don't need central headquarters anymore. They'll replay it on TV for us, but we'll just phatically relate to it and move on into the new, which is coming with cold fusion.
And Jerry, what do you think?
Well, I think it's all about dancing, so we're using spoken word here, and George Clinton's Chocolate City album that's 34 years old explains the whole Obama thing, and that's why he had Stevie Wonder in the White House, is because we ain't going to have a revolution, like Emma Goldman says, unless we can dance. And so it's all about dancing, and that's why the new video that I'm playing in an art museum of Bob for 14 minutes, 30 days, 8 hours a day, has Bob dancing in it. So it's all about shaking booty and moving our bodies, getting our blood flowing, breathing together in a media yoga, talking on Eben's radio show with all these diverse people, and shaking your body, moving yourself.
818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. We are just doing a little mashup here. Howard is being such a genie, coming on and joining Bob Dobbs, who came on and joined Jerry Fiaca. It is kind of like, I don't know. I mean, if you wanted the global mind to be represented, these are some folks to talk to about all of the appendages that have been snapped onto you and that you just don't know about. And so we're going to take a quick break. Come on down. And let's yammer more about this. We'll probably do this until around 3:30, and then we'll let our Jerry and Bob go and go on with Howard. But in the meantime, please come on down and be a part of this. Kind of a fun, unique deal that everybody is flexible and malleable in putting this virtual community together. You be a part of it here. The number here is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. The media and you, which is it? Is it you or it? All right, stand by. A lot of great folks on the line. Radio Alchemy.
Eclipsing conventional wisdom. All alchemists converge at www.radioalchemy.com for streaming audio and more.
Well, we're not going to play around with a quick long break here. We're going to make it quick and get back to our maestros that are on the lines. We have Jerry Fialka, who is a media ecologist, worked with Frank Zappa, brought Bob into Southern California and helped us learn to learn what seemingly is taking us all so long to wrap our minds around, which is the extensions of media, Marsha McLuhan's work, and how it is ever-present today. Also, Bob has joined us, which is a great synchronicity, and we absolutely love. You guys know Bob Dobbs, FiveBody.com, former member of an Illuminati family in France, has done some high-level security work of the solar government, and is back letting you know about what you can see from that perspective. And he is joined, and we are all joined by Howard Bloom, another absolute genie, a kid that at the age of, 16 was working on cancer research and decided not to go to the academic route, decided to chart his own destiny, as here talking about the ego, and that is a good thing. So we are just mashing up a lot of great things here with a lot of great minds, and I just appreciate you guys playing along because we just decided to have some fun like that. So let's bring in some callers because they have been waiting to speak with you all. And so let's welcome a caller one into our mashup with Bob, Jerry, and Howard. Welcome, caller one.
Am I caller one?
Yes, you are.
You just injected Obama on this brilliant program, and it just struck me that last night Chris Matthews, who's one of these celebrated television commentators,
yes,
just announced that he's going to give an award to a great radio announcer. And I'm certain that he's talking about Rush Limbaugh. How you could give an award to this man who's hoping that this president fails is something that I find difficult to understand. And I just wondered what do you feel about that?
Well, I think Rush Limbaugh needs more of his hillbilly heroin and to just really unplug himself. He is the flotation device in which an obsolete and ignorant huge takeover faction of the Republican Party is hoisting their flag on. And for Chris Matthews to do that, obviously, either his arms being twisted or he has Kool-Aid, because there is nothing to celebrate about a divisive hater. Somebody that uses the radio spectrum, there's just not enough time, to talk about Rush Limbaugh in a meaningful way and what he has done to, Republicans. He is their worst enemy, but yet, they prop, and he's really heavy. And it's hard to prop him up, but they are propping him up. And another thing about that is his battle with Michael Steele and how the Republicans are so cynical that, oh, you guys got a black? Well, we're going to go get one. We're going to get us a Michael Steele. Oh, you can eat some color? Well, let's get that Bobby Jindal, whatever that thing is down there. Let's get him. I mean, I can't believe people. You want a woman? You got Hillary? Well, we'll go snap us one. They don't give a damn about the people they represent. And if Republicans are going to go and sign up for that, then, the wheat and the chaff are separated, and we get to look at them for what they really are.
I don't know what we would do without KPFK. I mean, it's such a brilliant station and what it does, and it's so in my head until sometimes I'm driving along in my car and I hear that KPFK signal. Just the way you guys say it, it just goes off like a piece of music. And I just want to thank you for this station.
Well, thank you, sir, for being up late and being a part of this.
Right.
Thank you, sir. All right, I got to pop off a little bit. What do you guys think about Rush Limbaugh? What do you think about the Republican Party as, how is that as a medium?
It's the technology. It's a community. Rush Limbaugh is brilliant. You have to listen to him and study what he's doing.
I do. He's nasty.
No, he's not nasty. That's the tone he sets. He's nostalgic for the 60s abundance, a hardware man. But the interesting thing about Rush, I heard him just after Obama got in, and he was telling his callers, stop trying to bring up quotations and contradictions, he said, 6 weeks ago, 6 months ago. He says, it's never going to matter what he says. It's his style. It's his resonance. That's what we're up against. His followers will never think he's a failure. So So don't. He's telling his audience to not look and judge Obama by what he says, but what he does as a resident icon.
Well,
he's the only guy to say that.
Well, you know what? That's because you look at the effect of people that communicate on the right side of the dial, the right wing radio. Those types are just like the vomit casters such as him. Their resonance is to berate, is to belittle, and they have absolutely decimated political speech in the United States because they are so gutter. They are so low.
Political speech. We've had the greatest inflation of the economy in that period.
Inflation. You said inflation of the economy.
Yes.
That's fiat masturbation of a medium. That's, you know. But when it comes to actually having dialogue, actually being able to sit across and see that we're all Americans with something like that, that's what I'm talking about. His cadence is one of hate.
You're looking at your technological put-on and objecting to his technological put-on.
That's right.
You've got to look at your modality and what your sense of community is versus his.
Well, right. And, well, that's what he's doing to Obama. That's the point. Howard, what do you think about Rush Limbaugh, Republican medium?
Well, I've never listened to Rush Limbaugh, so anything I say is going to come from ignorance. But when the Republicans get up to complain about any of the legislation, whether it was the stimulus package a week ago or this week, the Omnibus Budget Act, I am appalled, because what they seem to be calling for is the kind of tax break policy that was tried as a stimulus package by George Bush only about 6 months ago. And they act as if they never learned a thing from experience, and they act as if that stimulus package was a success. It was not a success. It was a failure. And they're trying to ram a policy that failed down our throats. Now, the Republicans are not, in my view, to blame for the fact that we have a crash. We have crashes every 67 years. It's a cyclical thing. It doesn't matter who's in power. But the fact is, their stimulus package did not help. And they are not helping now. They are surely acting as obstructionists. But, Jerry, I think that was Jerry?
Yes, Jerry, sir.
Yeah, I think Jerry was right in that a figure like Rush Limbaugh or like Obama gives a core to a community. It gives a core of identity to a subculture. And Rush Limbaugh has a subculture that absolutely adores him because he gives them identity. And you and I belong to a different subculture. A subculture that's further over toward the left. So we are going to be offended by Rush Limbaugh for the rest of our lives, and sometimes it is worthwhile to take a step backwards outside of our own identities and our own interests and to do what Jerry said, and that is look at why Rush Limbaugh is effective within his own community.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Bob said that. Yeah.
Bob said that. I want credit for that, Howard.
Okay. Yeah. Bob said that. Jerry, do you want to say something about Rush?
Yeah. It's the founder of Pacifica Radio had a John Birch Society hour at the beginning of the history of this radio station, you know, and series. And that, because he knew how to embrace contradiction. Everything both Howard and Bob said were important. You create what you resist. Your enemy is your best teacher. So I don't have time to listen to Rush, but I know Bob has listened to Rush, and he's able to tell us, you know, the services and disservices. So that's what's important, is the people who are willing to listen to Rush and not attack him, have suspended judgment and say, here's what he's saying, and here's, you know, other points of view. So, again, it's not an attack mode. It's like, what can we learn from this guy?
But the thing is, when you listen to him, he isn't saying anything constructive. His idea is to be the pit bull that you've heard them for the past 8 years. Sean Hannity, all they do is talk about the Democrats because they have nothing good to say about their own party. That's the problem. They don't have ideas. All they have is dynamite, and they just blow things up. And that's what has stunted, you know, that divided and conquered, you know, our country. We have callers on the line. Let's go to them.
Yeah.
You are caller two. Caller two, you're on. Say something.
Well, you're right, Evan. That's what they're trying to do, is break up the United States.
Yes.
And recently, the media ran, there's two different Russians that are promoting books describing the breakup of the United States. I wonder what Mr. Bloom thinks about that. What would happen? Would we devolve into watersheds, or?
I think that the general direction of the world when it comes to the evolution of cultures has been increasing.
Idea is to be the pit bull that you've heard them for the past 8 years. Sean Hannity, all they do is talk about the Democrats because they have nothing good to say about their own party. That's the problem. They don't have ideas. All they have is dynamite, and they just blow things up. And that's what has stunted, divided and conquered, our country. We have callers on the line. Let's go to them.
Yeah.
You are caller two. Caller two, you're on. Say something.
Well, you're right, Evan. That's what they're trying to do is break up the United States.
Yes.
And recently, the media ran this. Two different Russians that are promoting books describing the breakup of the United States. I wonder what Mr. Bloom thinks about that. What would happen? Would we devolve into watersheds, or?
I think that the general direction of the world when it comes to the evolution of cultures has been increase in size. And any backpedaling at 510 AD when Rome was invaded, or 410 by Alaric, and the Roman Empire broke down have turned out to be temporary. Rome is the only one that went backwards to the extent that it did. The Chinese Empire has been continuous in its growth for the last 3,000 years. So I doubt that the United States is going to break up, and I certainly hope it isn't, because when there are breakups, they're breakups in periods of extreme violence. And that is not a violence any of us want to live under.
Bob? Well, that's good to hear, because I think that's what Russia's trying to do. They think they can get all the weird theories they want only through a breakup of the United States.
Well, let's hope
so
they don't.
Why they're,
history is against.
They're really enemies of the country, Russian, these extreme right wingers.
Yeah, and somewhere on the other, there are these enabler Democrats. Here are these addicts for power that are just a destructive force, and they have these Democrats who let them off. I mean, thank God Obama, during his address, came up and said, "I inherited this crisis. I came in at the coattails of your cutting taxes and going to war policies," and that he tried to finally identify it and put it back where he is, because all they wanted to do is some erasure of memory for folks. And that's something I want to ask you about. Caller, I want to thank you so much, sir, for being up late and being a part of this.
Boom on, Evan.
Thank you, sir. Let me ask you guys this. How is it, then, that you can have people like Rush Limbaugh, et cetera, still have validity when in their little echo chamber they have lied, and that their own constituents that they are speaking to have died in the hands of the people, that they are bankrupt? Their sons and daughters are fighting in these foreign wars, and yet they are still hanging on to these memes. How is that possible, Bob?
Well, I've explained it many times in their show, and you don't seem to understand it.
No, I'm just asking it. I'm just asking it for the sake of conversation. If you don't want to answer, I'll go to somebody else, Bob.
No, for the sake of put on. Well, it's a big topic, but let's remember that all search for identity is a violent quest. And so, if you bring in a new environment like the virtual environment of we have today, computer and internet, it's going to cause identity quests and identity violence in all former memes and crowds and technologies. It's a global violence. So I wouldn't focus on his identity quest and exclude others. KPFK, Pacifica has an identity quest. Everybody's got one now. Violence is the norm today.
Jerry, what do you think?
Yeah, it's the on what occasion do you lie, as Marcel Proust. We all lie, so are you the lie police? I mean, who's to say one lie is worse than another? You have your value judgment in your ethics, in your moral standards, and that's important. But it's also pulling away and understanding why have we gotten to a point in our society where there is a person like Rush Limbaugh. Turn to the artist. Why did people freak when Andre Serrano stuck a crucifix in a mayo jar filled with urine. Well, oh my God, this is shocking. Our arts council government gave this guy money to do this? Well, no. Why have we gotten to a point in our society when this happens? Don't blame the guy who's doing it. Take a look at what's happening and
see the content, Evan.
Oh, no, I don't agree with that at all. They have access to the content. They are the content. They have the access to everything to reflect, to hold up that mirror you talked about, to reflect upon what they are putting out. There is no disjunction between...
They live in the political form known as the United States. The Republicans want to maintain the country, the idea of the United States, and you can't do that anymore. It's disappeared as a technological environment. So they're nostalgic. And maybe to the degree that you want to keep the country together, you should thank the Republicans for being fanatics about that ancient meme.
Are you saying that the Democrats aren't for keeping the country together?
No, no. They're workers. They're solidarity around the world. They're unions. They move with new technologies. They don't understand why they never benefit from the new technologies, but they're for work and jobs.
The Republicans are finance. That wraps up labor 20 times in their own environment.
Republicans are software, Democrats are hardware.
Well, okay.
Money is software now.
Yes.
They float on that. Now, both of them have collapsed. We're in a whole new situation. Breakdown is breakthrough. I mean, this is great. None of them are going to help. We don't need to think in those terms.
Yeah, we are in those terms. We don't want to think in them. We want to think, you know, somewhere else. But when it comes to judgment, it's so interesting. I mean, do you guys believe there is something called truth? Do you think that there is a truth so that you can judge? Or do you sit there and just have this individual, you live your reality or not? Howard, what do you think?
Well, I think to be a cultural relativist, I think it is very relative, because if you believe profoundly that to do good means to help other people and never to hurt other people, you will behave very differently than if you were a person who, like the Vikings or like Achilles in the Trojan War, if you think that the measure of your worth is not how much good you do for other people, but is instead measured by how many people you can kill, you'll come to exactly the opposite conclusions about what the truth is. Truth starts with your premises, and your premises start with what Bob is talking about, identity, and your identity in a group. And also, I think Bob is onto something when he says, when he implies that the Republicans, being conservative, are the folks who try to hold things together, and those of us who are further on the left, we're the searchers, the explorers, the antennae, and you need both centralizers and you need explorers to make a society work.
Fantastic, fantastic. Let's bring on the phone lines. Caller 6. Caller 6, you are on with the gang. Bob,
yeah.
Howard, and Jerry.
That be me?
Yes, sir.
Oh, hi.
Hey.
This is Gopal, and it's incredible. I just expanded twice because I started as a 3, and now I'm a 6. So, and I still love this idea as this Mr. Limbaugh.
Yeah.
As a flotation device, because I thought he was more or less just letting everyone know that he was doing W.C. Fields or something like that, you know? And good old Frank, well, good old, I love hearing you guys because it gives me faith that if I stay around, I might be able to grow young too. And I know that, like, Frank Zappa, he's so much into this concept of a chincha beta beta tatva, where we're simultaneously one yet different. And I was wondering what you thought of, like, the golden age where people take their ego off and kind of just dance on it and then have big feasts. And, like, the supreme spirit.
You know what, darling? Let's go with.
Would that not also, like, all dichotomies? Everything's like resolved there, like you were saying. There's my story, your story, and then the truth.
Okay.
Anyway, and I'd be going.
Thank you, darling. Bye. Great. Okay. That was a great question. All right. Who wants to handle that first?
I want to say something. Marshall McLuhan spent his life translating Finnegan's Wake, and I make the claim that I'm spending my life translating Zappa. And I'm glad the caller brought up Zappa, because I was going to bring him up several times. But the issue of, what did he say? What was his, give me a word that he said. The cartoon image was good. The movie actor, but what was his main thing?
He's talking about taking off the ego and dancing upon
it. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. We need to say that we got four bodies. That means we got four egos. You got the chemical body, chemical ego, astral body, astral ego, TV body, TV ego, and chip body, chip ego. This is what we need to learn to juggle. We're already doing it unconsciously. I call it quadrophenia, which is schizophrenia squared. And that is means that any memes like spirituality or chemistry or any of the ideas of ego within the chemical body are limited. You need to realize you've got four egos at least now, and they're totally different worlds and different laws. That's the complexity I'm advocating.
Very good, very good. Howard or Jerry, any comments?
Evan, thank you. And it was beautiful because Frank had a song called Take Your Clothes Off When You Dance. This is like take your technologies or mediums off, and maybe you'll be able to discover their hidden effects. So it's a media fast. So if we could do without Rush for a week and then turn them on for a week, we can understand how he's affecting us. And on to the truth, let me just repeat that one little quote. Science finds no truth. It discovers unknown facts that can be interpreted in 2,200,000 different ways.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara, and 90.7 in San Diego. We are just doing a little spontaneous mashup. It started with First Hour with Jerry Fialka, a media guru right here in Southern California, talking about the events that he's been doing, talking about his munching on Bob and McLuhan. His website is laughtears.com for events here, and all of a sudden Bob shows up, and his website is fivebody.com. And so there it is, a student and teacher, you know, coming on together. And then, of course, Howard was to be on, Howard Bloom, just genius extraordinaire, somebody who was leapfrogged in between power centers and centers of stardom and saw how all of those environments work and what he can do in that. And he has graciously joined this party. And so we'll continue with the next calls, and then we'll let Bob and Jerry go and finish up with Howard. So if you want to get in while all three of these mindsets are here to reflect upon your question, the number is 818-985-5735, 818-985-KPFK. Hurry on down. Time is ticking, and so don't waste any of it.
Where the past and the future converge. Go to www.radioalchemy.com, RadioAlchemy.com, for streaming audio and more.
And remember, loves, to go to www.kpfk.org, kpfk.org, for all the goodness which is KPFK. And that's you. And, of course, when I said for folks to get in on it, boy, did people rush to the lines to get on this. Oh, my goodness. All right, darling. So we are going to go to calls. Maybe we can make things kind of shorter in our questions and answers so we can get as many of you folks on. So please be conscious that there are lots of people up at 3:45 in the morning to speak to our great mind jam here, Bob Dobbs, Jerry Fialka, and Howard Bloom. All right, let's go to... Caller seven, you are on with the gang. Welcome.
Hi, Evan. It's Lieutenant Eric Schein.
Eric, how are you?
I'm alive.
Yes, you are. Yes, you are, sir. Fantastic.
I'm alive and listening.
Do you have a question for?
I do. I want to get back in touch with you and speak to you off the air, but
good.
What's going on? I went to a military academy, naval officer. I went to King's Point, United States Merchant Marine Academy, sister academy, West Point, Annapolis. And what I learned at the Academy is that they break things down to build them back up. And what is going on here in the United States is not just economic warfare, but they are doing this to build up into the North American Union. And they want to merge the United States with Canada and Mexico. And you have to remember that Canada is a constitutional monarchy. 79% of its subjects don't understand the government that they live in. They just got a rude awakening with Harper. They were going to do a vote of no confidence to remove him. He went ahead and appealed to the Queen. This is last year.
Right.
Through the Consulate General. The Queen said that the Parliament could not meet to carry on a vote of no confidence. And, you know, people don't understand. The Queen is still on their money, still on their public contracts. They are a constitutional monarchy. And when we merge with Canada, we lose our sovereignty. Like, the individuals who are playing this out wish to recreate the United Kingdom. They hate republics. They hate self-governance.
Yes.
And they've been at this for a very long time. And I'd like, you know, real quick, just want to throw in the thing, is they don't do things like take the Coast Guard, move it from the Department of Transportation into Homeland Security, and turn it from a civil service agency into a branch of military operating under military law in Homeland Security, unless, and this happened 5 years ago, unless they know what is coming and they are involved in its creation. And the only way that we can prevent it is to be well-informed and to resist in any and all manner and any and all shape and any and all form. And I thank your three guests for, you know, their part in all of this and in increasing the level of the discussion.
Great.
And, of course, your own work as well.
Hey, Eric, yes, we'll definitely speak. Thank you for your courage and being a hero and a whistleblower, dear. And so with that, let's pose in a media environment and understanding these environments, the North American Union and that concept and the monarchy. Eric, darling, thank you so much.
Peace.
Let's talk about the monarchy itself. Bob, you're a part of an organization, Resurrected. Is your organization a retrieval? Is it something different from what we understand about bloodlines and monarchies? What about that as an environment?
Yeah, no, we are juggling all four environments, all four bodies. That's what we do at the reconvened Soul of Government and Secret Council 10. But this Eric expressed his values and what he wants to preserve or fight against. Well, I would ask him or anybody to look at the technologies that created those values. He's talking as someone who's in love with the printed book and its effect. But there are many other new media now which creates other sense of values, and you see that in young people. They're totally different from the literate people. We got to look at the technologies that are, and we're talking media here, technologies, how they form communities and memes and personalities and psychologies, and see why the values are aligned with that kind of impression. I mean, Eric is an eye person, EYE, worried about the boundaries of the United States, and he sees a mishmash. And then he doesn't like the manuscript technology that brought in monarchies. So you got the McLuhan said that Watergate was a battle between the newspaper and television for the advertising dollar. That is a good way to look at crises. Look at the technologies they're fighting. Right now you got cold fusion lurking on the horizon. That's threatening everybody.
Bob, what environments are at war? If you were to rank the four bodies and which is the strongest has the strongest effects to the weakest, how would you rank them?
Okay, we got radio, and these we don't have particular media as McLuhan laid out anymore. It's all merged in a seamless web, so I call it paramedia. Jerry's a media ecologist. I say I'm a paramedia ecologist. So the afterimages of Rush Limbaugh is radio. The afterimage of television is Jon Stewart. The afterimages of computer is, say, Steve Jobs as he passes away. And then the afterimage of the satellite is what I do. So you got these four technological environments at separate phases throughout the 20th century, which have now evaporated and merged into a mystery landscape. And I represent the mystery landscape, which cold fusion will bring in, and how it relates to the four memes/technologies.
But is one more dominant than the other?
No. The cancellation is the factor here. That's why people complain about Obama retrieving the Clinton people and Paul Volcker and bringing back the old financial guys that created this problem. Well, that's because the chip landscape can't be gotten rid of.
And so I think Obama needs to define his issues and problems better than he's doing, and I claim I'm doing that in my show. You need to talk not in values per se, anthropomorphic values. You need to talk about the technologies, which are anthropomorphic. So the cancellation is the problem today. Everything is constantly canceled.
Can I throw a paradox into the works, Bob?
Please.
Go ahead.
Technology, we're all accustomed to analyzing technology as if its outcomes are absolutely fixed. But in reality, it's not quite that way. We all interpret the printing press as being something that gave birth to immense freedoms in the West. For example, it gave birth to the Protestant movement, which removed us from the control of the Roman Catholic Church and gave us our own Bibles, put them in our hands, and let us convene with God directly. But freedom is not the inevitable consequence of having a printing press. In Russia, printing presses were introduced to serve a radically different purpose. They were used to homogenize the people. Only the government was allowed to have them, the government of the Tsar, and the printing presses were used exclusively for the mass production of ukases, that is, issuances of orders to the people from the Tsar himself. So in one context, the context of Western society, the printing press helped open the floodgates of freedom. In the context of another society, Tsarist Russia, the printing press was an instrument of oppression, meaning the bottom line is that a technology can be taken in a great many different directions, and there's nothing inevitable about the mimetic meme consequences of a technology.
Howard, you just did pure McLuhanism there.
Uh-huh.
That's what he said, bigger ground relationship. Culture is the content. Culture imposes assumptions on an environment. Environment
right.
imposes its assumptions back on the culture.
And one of the points that we're all looking at a little while ago is that it's useful to have cultural relativism so you can step back every once in a while and see why the things you take for granted as inevitable are not inevitable, and the things that could have happened that might give you a different perspective on your everyday realities.
Let's bring online caller one. Caller one, you're on with the gang.
Hello, would that be me?
Yes, welcome.
Okay, hi. My name is Nathan. I'm a break. As a teenager, I was a break dancer, and I've from the start of my life that I started to be able to be a free thinker at an early age.
Yes.
I always thought, life is more than just what we think we know.
Yes.
So I always keep myself open to new ideas that might change, evolve, or anything like that.
Right.
Any word that you use to describe the changes in your ideas that you think at the time as you perceive them into the future and find a new way of looking at it and a new way of thinking about how you do grasp a certain thing that you might be thinking about. So I've been listening and taking what limited notes I could on my iPod. So everything that I got here when I came to the edge of, where I had to stop taking notes, has been, could have been, added to as the show went on. So what I'm trying to say here is there's things that you guys have talked about since the point of me not being able to take notes, right?
Right, right.
All those things you might want to include on this, because this is only me looking and saying what I see, and I'm going to wait and see what turns out. So
okay.
Let me first start with awareness growth driven by feelings, right? One point set at the center, right?
Darling, you know what? It is late. We don't have much, and so we need one question,
okay,
love. I appreciate your enthusiasm.
One real quick thing then. The idea versus media, right? Want
okay.
versus the need, right? And the need and want, those are two different things. Want is the early on beginning of a structure. The need is the towards the end, the rush. Oh no, here comes where I have to make the decision, right? So that's ease versus dis-ease, and that's order and disorder, right? So
okay.
Self-image, black and white, that's dealing with
Darling,
now,
come on. We put this out there. We have to be aware of other people that are waiting in line, okay?
Okay, so that's multiplicity and the black and white image of America, right? So multiplicity
okay.
of the world.
All right.
Thank you. I'll step off and listen.
Okay, darling. Thank you for your call.
Goodbye.
All right. Jerry, how about if you approach that?
Yeah, well, back to monarchy for a second. Marshall was a Canadian, and that's why he could see what was going on in the U.S., because he was detached and not being an American. And Frank said, we can change things by working from within. So you got to be part of the monarchy like Bob is. Now, to this last caller, culture is our business is what Marshall wrote. And Robert Williams, the underground comic cartoonist who's gone into the mainstream art museum world, says, if it matches the couch, it's art. If it demands attention, it's culture. So this is just the paradox. This last caller was just trying to deal with the yin and the yang and embrace the contradictions.
Okay. Fantastic. Caller five, you are on. Welcome.
Hello, Evan. I want you to know that you're the best, and you picked the best panelist there could be. But I make my comments brief. March 4th show of 2009 was put out on something's happening in Roy Hollywood. He was narrating what was a manifesto put out by Gary Noel.
Right.
It aired again immediately. Within prime time, if possible, it was about the 19 tipping points. And it was very, very moving, you know, when it was put out. But anyway, I'd like to say this part right here. The forming of a corporation is similar to our government is forming due to the fact, you know, saying, you know, you have people within the side of a corporation that's working, because it's like a corporation can't get a colon, you know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And we're like, but see, we the people, we got the power. We're within the government. And people, like, you know, say you can't touch the corporation, or you can't touch the government. It's just like a well, anyway.
Tell us, so.
I'm kind of going fast because I know I want somebody to get on the line, too. But anyway, I think it needs to be re-aired immediately, the show March the 4th. On Royal Hollywood, and just look it up on the web or whatever. It needs to be re-aired immediately. Thank you.
Okay. Talking about a progressive approach to solving the financial crisis, which Bob, you would say is impossible, I'm sure. But we will go on to our next caller, and that is caller six. Caller six, welcome. Welcome to KPFK.
Yes. Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
This is a great show, you know why the sun never sets on the British Empire?
Why?
God doesn't trust him in the dark. But I mean, you guys are talking about these paradoxes, and the reason I called was, I'm Nimai, and I think you were trying to think of that word, like when you what was that word that other guy said? It was chintya beta beta tattva. Simultaneously one and different.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would think, like, the way Einstein kind of showed us the way, it's mainly all a bunch of, like, space or antimatter. Somebody actually got the Nobel Prize in the 50s for discovering antimatter. Mm-hmm. You know, so mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. that's kind of amazing. So, and without all this repression and whatnot, I don't think we could have as much humor. And we couldn't have any underground.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very good. That's no? That's a great point. Let's throw that out and see how they go after that. Thank you, sir. Whoa, hung
ecology. Up. Ecology.
Say that again.
That's the ecology, media ecology. And we can look at the structures of the ecology, not just recognize the wisdom of yin-yang, but recognize that the ratios change so that if you look at the four-part, A is the B is C is D, which is metaphor, which is analogy, which is community, which is technology. You look at the four senses we have and how they alter when new media come in as extensions. And so it's not just a dyad. It's a triad and a tetrad and a pentad, moving towards a hexad. It's the ability to image these different levels. Now, not everybody can do that. But we are going to have to learn how to do it, because you're going to be living in five places at once from now on.
Jerry,
Yeah, we are living in five places.
Right.
And that's why I've always learned from Bob that what these people who are greedy or evil do is puny compared to what Twitter is doing to Congress or what cell phones is doing to Congress.
Right.
To all of us, and what electronic billboards is doing to all of us and helping us live in five places at once. And that's the mystery of art, is that we're not sure if it activates us or pacifies us.
Well, when you look then at the state of the world, are you saying then that what we have created, we've just turned into a Frankenstein? I mean, is it already written on the wall? From everything that we're seeing, obviously, the hidden ground or the invisible repercussions of this technology is one that is dehumanizing.
No, I don't see a mess happening today.
The technologies that we have, Evan, are so incredibly humanizing that it defies all belief.
You think they're more humanizing? Okay.
They're more humanizing. Once upon a time, I believe it was about 1710, there was a very wealthy man in Italy who had this weird idea. He was really into musical instruments. He was really into making his own music, and he hired a specialist to come in and help him devise a device that would mechanize music to the nth degree. It was a device that would use levers, rods, and hammers to make music, removing the human touch, removing the human fingers from the strings. But once they'd put together the instrument that this instrument maker was hired to assemble, it produced a sound unlike any sound other human beings had ever heard. Now, if you'd looked at it and seen that it was merely rods and gears, or rods and levers, you would have said, this is dehumanizing. Machines should not be making music. But in fact, the device was the piano, and the piano utterly changed the way humans dreamed of music. Without the piano, Mozart couldn't have had his dreams of rich melodic music. Without the piano and Mozart, Beethoven couldn't have had his dreams of rich, melodic, and emotionally intense, passionate, powerful, angry music. So every device, it's back to the example of the Russians in the printing press and the West in the printing press. Every device has yin and yang. Every device can become an oppressor, and every device can become a liberator.
This is KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles 98.7 FM in Santa Barbara. We have been doing a brain bake, something just that something that just came organically from the genies that we have online. We started with Jerry Fialka, website laughtears.com. He's going to be in Michigan bringing the media and the mechanism to folks and bringing the artists out. And Jerry, I want to thank you so much for all that you have done for the community, what you have done for resurrecting McLuhan and introducing Bob in Los Angeles. And I really hope you have a fabulous time and look forward to having you on in 2009. It was really fun, and it's been too long since that's happened.
Thanks, Evan. And you're really a gem, a GEM, a geo-earth mother. That's what James Joyce talked about with the value of the goddess that you are.
Well, you are too sweet, and it's just such an honor to be able to have you guys on and for you guys to be so flexible and to just go at it like this with all of our fantastic listeners. And so thank you so much, man. Thank you. Bob just popping up out of nowhere, but that's what the solar government does, right? Secret Council of Ten. Yes,
yep.
Absolutely. And so, as always, you know what? Thank you for all of the times that you have come on and tried it. And you're saying, I don't understand. Well, somebody called in and said they've been listening to you for 15 years and they still don't know what you're saying. So obviously you still have to come back. We still have to munch on this because it's all happening simultaneously, but we love what you do, and we just appreciate that you are trying so hard to communicate what is going on, and it's just fantastic. Thank you, Bob.
Well, Evan, I'm just a regular guy, and I don't know what I think until I say it.
Okay. Very good.
Thank
and
you.
We'll have to reflect upon that.
Yes.
All right, dear. All right, so...
Reflect away.
And that we will do. All right. And so Bob's website is fivebody.com. You go there, you'll see that he's bringing his history to the Internet, so you can hear more about his work there on the Internet. We're going to continue and go on with our discussion and your calls with Howard Bloom. Officer, the officer. He is the officer in charge here on KPFK. Let me just take this quick break. We're going to be back with Howard Bloom for the next, I think, 15 minutes we have, if Howard could be with us. And we will continue our talks with you and about this environment that we find ourselves in. Stay tuned.
Radio Alchemy. Eclipsing conventional wisdom.